You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
How many discounts does USAA auto insurance offer? Too many to say here. Multi-vehicle discount, safe driver discount, new vehicle discount, storage discount, legacy.
How many discounts will you stack up? Tap the banner or visit usaa.com/autodiscounts. Restrictions apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Hunting Gear Podcast, and I am your host, Dan Johnson. And today we're having like a conversation. It's a continued conversation from the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. Today I have Scott Redinger on the podcast, and he's going to talk about how he made some of his decisions on hunting gear and equipment, kind of being a newbie in the bow hunting space over the last handful of years. And we're going to get into that conversation and talk about that. We did an episode on the Nine Finger Chronicles all about life in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and I think that was a really great episode. I got some good feedback from it, so it was a good episode. So thanks for doing this again, and I like these little niche conversations that go beyond that. So Scott, man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on the podcast, man.
Hey, absolutely. I mean, now I can say I'm a recurring guest.
Yes. So, yes. What do they say in the newsroom? They say, oh, he's a contributor for the Sportsman's Empire.
Yeah. Oh, even now you're really puffing up my ego.
Exactly.
I can add that to my social media, like taglines. Like,
I love it. I love it. Contributor. Yep. So I don't even know. I know where I want to go with this podcast, but why don't we start off by letting everybody know where you live? I think I already kind of broke it there. And what do you do for a living?
Yeah, absolutely. So I live in Iron Mountain, Michigan, which is right on the border of Michigan and Wisconsin, which is about an hour and a half north of Green Bay, Wisconsin, if you're unfamiliar with the area. For a living, I am a claims manager for an insurance company by day. And by night, I'm a father of two kids, moonlight as a children's book author, used to host a podcast. I'm in the woods as much as I possibly can. And thankfully I've got a great job and a great company that I work for that, you know, provides me the opportunity to get out and chase whitetails kind of I don't want to say at my leisure, but as long as my work is getting done and everything's taken care of, I can get away as need be to chase whitetails around the woods. So
I love it. All those sound like pretty cool things. Author, I know that if I was going to create a book, and this is no jab at you, but I feel like I would only be able to write a children's book. Not only because my intelligence is not on par with like a novel per se.
No, and I'll be honest with you, I'm probably in the same boat as you, Dan. You know, how when I say moonlight as an author really kind of came up in a roundabout way. I got my degree from Central Michigan University in elementary education. And one of my courses, the project for the course was coming up with a children's book. Mm-hmm. That was where the birth of my idea for my book, Why Is for Youper, that's all about the Upper Peninsula. It's a simple ABC book that rhymes. That was the birth of this idea. I got an A on the project, and then family and friends were kind of like, hey, I've never really seen a book like that. You should maybe do something with it. But at the time, I was just a broke college kid. So, you know, it took a few years of coming to get putting it together into like a finished product. It's been out for 10 years. This is its 10-year anniversary. I've sold, I self-publish it. I've sold right around 6,600 copies of it.
Oh, wow.
Love it. That's all just me doing it, you know, picking myself up by the bootstraps, as they say, and just doing it all myself. So
I love it. I love it. Perfect. Perfect. All right. Before we start talking hunting gear and equipment, I do have to send a huge shout out to the partner of this podcast, and that is Reveal Trail Cameras. It's a cellular trail camera, and these guys are doing amazing things. If you don't know who Reveal is, you're probably living under a rock as far as hunting gear and equipment is concerned. These guys are all over the place, and they have what some might argue would be one of the best functioning and easiest to use cellular trail cameras on the market. So the functionality is outstanding and the ease of use is outstanding, and it's matched with an app and on your phone or on your desktop that is second to none, right? So I think I timed the other earlier this year when I was setting up trail cameras. It took me less than 3 minutes to set up one cellular trail camera, put the batteries in, make sure you have the app downloaded, and then you scan a QR code through your phone that's on the camera, and then bingo, bango, you're set up and ready to go. So if you want to find out more information about Reveal cellular trail cameras, go visit tacticam.com/cameras and check out the brand new Ultra from Reveal. So, all right. I know that you're new into the bow hunting space and that you've always been kind of in the traditional Upper Peninsula gun season crew. All right. So what I want to know is, what is your firearm of choice for the gun season? And has that changed over the years?
My firearm of choice has not changed. It has been the same since I was 14 years old and my dad took me down to the local Dunham's sports store at the time to pick out my first hunting rifle. It's a classic too. It's a Marlin 30-30, you know, that model. I think it's a model 336, that lever action. It's got the real short barrel. And it's just an awesome gun for the type of hunting that you do up here in the Upper Peninsula. I mean, it's big woods, but pretty thick cover, at least, you know, where my camp is at. So, I mean, at the most, I'm shooting maybe 100 yards max, I would say. Yeah. Most of my setups are usually somewhere around probably 75 yards, 80 yards right in there. So just a great little gun. And I don't know, personally, I just think lever actions are really cool. There's just something about the look to them that I like. And, you know, it's one of those things where over the years, my dad has tried to like trade me to get that gun, and he'll make the joke like, "Oh, I bought it for you," and I'm like, "Yeah, but it you bought it, but it was for me. It was a gift. Yeah. You can't take it back now that just because you realize what a cool gun it is. Like, that's not how it works."
right, dude. The lever action, there's something special about that. It's almost like has a Wild West or trapper type vibe about it. And from like a historical standpoint.
Yeah, I feel the same. It's just what it feels like when every time you take it out. That's what I was thinking in my head when I was saying it. They're just cool looking. I think of the Wild West or that old trapper lifestyle. So yeah. That old Marlin 30-30 is something I hold near and dear to my heart. I've taken very good care of it over the years, and I have no plans, at least if I'm going to be hunting up here in the UP, I really don't have any plans of switching that gun out anytime soon.
Yeah, and it's got a personal meaning too, right? It's not like it's just, well, if something better comes along, I'm going to switch it. Let me ask you this question. How many deer do you think you've shot with that gun?
I would say at least 7 or 8.
Okay.
In my life, you know, as we talked about in our last episode up here in the UP, in the big woods, deer density is not what it is in a lot of other places. So it's not like, I'm bagging a buck every single year, during rifle season. So it was, you know, every couple of years since I've been 14. So yeah, 7 or 8, I think.
Gotcha.
I'm trying to do the Rolodex really quick in my head here.
Yeah. What's the ammunition of choice for that gun?
So I also, I am very traditional. I don't stray too far from the path of the Remington Core-Locks. I stick with those. Usually, I'm going with a little bit of a heavier grain, like 160, you know, and to me, I guess that's heavier. Maybe to some other people, they're like, that's not a heavier grain. But, again, because I'm not shooting super far, that's just always been my go-to. And to be honest with you, my thought process from there was probably that's the box that we bought when we first bought the rifle. And then I was like, okay, well, I'm going to just keep buying that same box every single year. It's readily available. It's at a decent price point. Like, you know, it's just kind of that thing of, okay, well, that's what my dad picked out when we bought the gun. So I may as well just keep running with that, especially if, you know, I've successfully been killing deer with it and not having to track very far or anything like that. So,
Right. What do you have on it for an optic?
So, I used to have, until last year, I finally broke down and changed out the scope. I had an old, I believe the brand name was, I don't think it was a Tasco. I want to say it was just called Game Scope or something. It was a very old scope my dad had on there, and it was just a very basic, like 10x4. Uh-huh. And I finally broke down last year and put a Vortex on there. So
that a boy.
Yeah, so I know they're one of your sponsors. So yeah, I put a Vortex on there, and I couldn't be happier with it.
You know which one you put on it?
I off the top of my head, let me look real quick. I might be able to tell you. I can't remember right off the top of my head. I'll be honest with you, but I've gotten so into bow hunting that a lot of my rifle gear and my setup, whatever, has fallen by the wayside a little bit. I mean, it's there and it's readily available, but I'm way more into my bow hunting gear than I am my rifle stuff these days. But let me look.
Is it a Diamondback?
I believe it's the Vortex Diamondback. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really dependable scope, dude. I have one of those on my 350 Legend that I bought. It came in a combo pack at Shields. So yep. I got the 350 Legend for straight wall cartridges. And for, you know, youth season here in Iowa, you can use that. And it came in a combo with a Savage Arms rifle. 357, and so Savage, and it's a great gun, dude. You know what's awesome about rifles? Like, I, as a bow hunter, it almost pains me to say it, but firearms are sweet, and the ability to really dial one in and shoot at 100 yards or more and be accurate and make your scope adjustments. Not only is it fun, but it's pretty sweet knowing that if a deer walks into 100 yards, it's going to die, right? Like there's something about that that's pretty sweet from a rifle or a firearm standpoint.
I agree with you. I mean, as much as I love bow hunting, when you're talking about like dialing in your gun, I could sit at the range all day and go through, I shouldn't say all day, but go through a box of shells.
Right.
No problem. Just tinkering.
Right.
You know, that type of stuff is really fun to do.
Mm, absolutely. Okay. Now, as something happened and you started getting this, God, I hate to even use the word in today's day and age, but you had to like transition, right?
Yes.
So, you started to transition into a bow hunter.
Yep.
And talk to me about what that process was, as far as doing the research or looking for a specific bow, arrows, broadheads, you know, release, all of that, and what that looked like for you.
Yeah. So, you know, as I mentioned in our other podcast, this was all kind of right around that COVID time when mm-hmm. it felt like everybody was trying to just get out of the house and get into the woods. And so as I was kind of making that transition and deciding, okay, I want to get into bow hunting, I know it's not a real sexy answer, but I'll be honest, when I was starting to look for a bow, I was just trying to find something that was cheap but dependable, because at that point I didn't know, okay, is this bow hunting gonna stick? Is this gonna be it for me? I mean, do I want to really be into it for a real expensive bow, and after a couple of years this just isn't for me, and then I'm sitting on, you know, a $1,200, $1,500 bow? I mean, the sky's the limit once you start adding stuff on. So again, dependability number one was important to me, but to that price point where I could get in on a bow for a good deal, where it wasn't super daunting from a monetary investment, that was really kind of my goal. Thankfully things kind of lined up for me where so for the past few years I've been a part of the Huntwise field team, which Huntwise is an app similar to Onyx and all of those other ones, where you know, I provide them feedback on their app on a yearly basis. Being up here in the Northwoods where cell phone signal isn't all that great, I kind of like test things out for them and tell them the good, bad, and the in-between, what have you. As a part of that, I have a full access to their app, which is like their elite product, gives you deals for certain carriers or certain products. And one of them, the year that I was starting to get into bow hunting or thinking about doing it, was bear archery.
Okay.
So I went the bear archery route, and I was able to find one of their bows that was a year prior. So it wasn't the newest year. I kind of waited until, well, right around now, this time of year, where they're bringing out, you know, new bows for they start in the fall, they release, okay, here's going to be our 2026 line. I waited until after that had came out, and they were trying to like get rid of their 2025 line, so they knocked some of the prices down there. That plus a discount code that I was able to get through that Huntwise Elite membership, I was able to get a bear archery. It's actually their entry line. It's the Carnage Dynamic 2.
Okay. Okay.
And it's their ready to hunt package. So it already had already had the sight on there and all the bells and whistles, the stabilizer, everything was already on the bow. So
yeah.
So I was able to get, you know, what normally would probably be like $600-$800 bow for a fraction of that price.
Yeah.
Again, I know that's not a super sexy answer for, you know, the latest and greatest that's out there, but I was just trying to get in and find something that I knew could get the job done and be dependable without breaking my bank.
Yeah, dude. And isn't that what everybody's looking for these days? It may not be a sexy answer, but it's probably the most relatable answer, because I'll tell you this, I've been looking at new bows as well. And dude, as a hobby for what I'm going to consider the working class, right? Like, I don't know. Bow hunting, I'm also a buy once, cry once type of guy.
Sure.
But I feel like today, in for the flagship bows of all these brands, you're going to be crying for a long time when you have bows that are close to that $2,000 mark, right? And I look at that, I'm like, dude, guns, a firearm. you have to love bow hunting to spend that kind of money on it, which, you know, I'll probably do at some point. But what it does is, I used to be that guy who would trade in a bow once every year when I was really, really into it, to 2 years. Now I've had my last bow here for what, 5 years?
Sure.
And so I'm just like, it gets the job done, dude. And so it's not this new product. It's not the sexy new product. You know, like this week, the ATA show is going on, and you're going to start seeing on social media a whole bunch of people talk about the latest and greatest products and things like that coming from the ATA show. And for me, I'm just happy to be in the woods with the gear that I have. You know what I mean? And so,
100%.
You know what I mean? And so, but the cool thing about that is, there has been in the industry, if you look closer, the package that I bought with the Savage and the Vortex scope,
the package that you have, the quote unquote ready to hunt package. Yep. You see that a lot now across the entire hunting industry. And it is literally to help people save money and to get them in the woods with everything that they need to be successful. There's like the a la carte. Yes, that's still good. Of mm-hmm. I'm going to pick this. My guess is that a Trophy Ridge sight came on it.
Yep. Everything was Trophy Ridge. I don't think I mentioned that prior.
It makes sense because they're together under the same umbrella. Trophy Ridge and Bear Archery are under the same holding company. So, cool.
I think the package that I bought too even came with the Trophy Ridge release. I'm just using that standard, you know, strap to your wrist release, mm-hmm. very traditional in that sense. I know in the question you had posed, you had asked about arrow setup and all of that too. Because I hadn't shot a bow probably since I was a kid, when I got the bow, I went straight to my local bow shop and, cause I had to purchase it directly through Bear basically to use that discount code.
Yeah.
I went straight to my local bow tech and I was like, hey, I have not shot a bow since I was, you know, 14 or 15 messing around in the yard with, you know, with my cousins. What can we do here? Like, you need to help me figure out draw length, get my poundage dialed in, the right arrows, all that mm-hmm. stuff. And my local bow shop, shout out to Hardcore Outfitters here in Iron Mountain, because they I had a little bit of trepidation going in, not sure, you know, how they would react to that, you know, me not buying the bow there, but saying, hey, I need help. And they welcomed me with open arms. They were like, hey, it's awesome that you're getting into bow hunting after this many years. Yeah, we'll get you set up. And so I'm running Easton's arrows, the 6.5s. Right now, this year I shot 400s, but I think I'm going to probably dial that back to the 340s. You know, I had my poundage down a bit and I'm starting to kind of up it again. Why, I don't really know. I'm just starting to tinker a little bit mm-hmm. more with that. But because I had my poundage down where I was really just trying to feel more comfortable in the woods, be able to hold that draw as long as I could. I had a little bit of a heavier arrow, but like I said, I think this year I'm going to probably drop it back to the 340s.
And what's the grain per inch? Do you know that?
I don't. I'm
or
not.
Your total arrow weight? Do you know that at all?
I wish I could say that I did, but I'm not that geeked out on the.
You're not a nerd yet. You're not a bow hunting nerd yet, right?
No, I'm not quite there. You know, the bow tech was basically like, okay, well, your poundage is at this. Here's the arrow I would go with. I still run the mechanical broadheads. I'm a rage in the cage guy. I haven't had one fail me yet. Every now and then I hear a horror story from somebody, but I've had nothing but success. You know, I've been bow hunting for 5 years. And in that time I've had five deer that I've shot with a bow, one with a rifle. So, I mean, it's been working. So I'm sticking with what works.
Absolutely, man. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Absolutely. Okay. The rage, I remember the rage motto, the unofficial rage motto was shoot them in the middle, find them in the morning. And
I've never heard that. That's great.
And so it was just like basically massive, massive wound channels for bad shots in the guts. And then you just leave the woods and you come back and find them after they bed down for a while. So, but so I always got a kick out of that. Now, when you, like, I know a lot of guys do this, and when I first started bow hunting back, like, or I shouldn't say when I first started, when I first started getting serious about it and I was spending my own money getting into it, I started looking, like, I relied heavily on what other people who knew more than me said, right? So, like, no. I had Sam Calora. He owned a bow. He's like, number one, he's a big buck killer in Iowa. And number two, he's owned a bow shop for ever since I've known him, right? Yeah. And so I got a lot of my information from him and other guys that would come in and visit that bow shop about what arrows to use and what things like that. And so I got I started off with the Easton, man, I can't even remember. Like, when I first started hunting, I was still using aluminums, but then I, you know, turned over to carbon arrows, and they were a very popular arrow that was designed for hunters. And then I've also used Carbon Express. I've used Carbon Express. I've used the Easton Full Metal Jackets. And then when I started getting real critical about, so I don't know about you, but this is how I think. The bow is great. It sends the message. The message, though, is the arrow. So I want the first thing to hit the deer, a broadhead, to be the best, in my opinion, of what I feel that is, followed by the delivery system, which is like the arrow, right? And sure. So I've kind of landed on a higher end arrow in day six arrows that are, in my opinion, the best arrows on the market, period.
Okay.
Right? And so that's my opinion.
Yeah.
And so I went the high end route there, and I personally feel like almost some people have it backwards. I'd love to get your take on this, where they feel the bow itself is the necessity and the arrow and the broadhead are the afterthought. And so I have it flipped, where I would rather spend more money on the arrow and broadhead than I would on the bow, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I feel like I kind of have the same train of thought as you. You know, in purchasing my arrows and going with the recommendation of my bow tech, I kind of just told him, like, look, I don't want your bottom of the barrel arrows, but I'm also not trying to, like, break the bank. I want those ones. I don't mind spending a little bit of money on my arrows and my broadheads, typically because if you're doing it right, you're only using them, what, a couple times a year, where if you're just shooting in the backyard, you can use different arrows or you know, order some cheapies where at least the weight is close. So, you know, what you're practicing with is similar, but you're right. you're not wrecking your good arrows. At least that's how I operate. Obviously, I'm sure everybody's different and has their own opinion on that. But, you know, I might order some cheapy knockoff ones off of Walmart or Amazon or whatever and just make sure the weight matches up. You know, to what I'm shooting. But I would agree with you that I would rather spend a little more on the arrow and the broadheads, than the bow itself. For everything that you just mentioned, I mean, you know, that's the message that's getting delivered to the deer. So I think what you're saying is spot on.
Yeah. Do you know what specific Easton arrow you're shooting?
I think I have one right here. Give me just a second. I hate to jump off camera, but let me just grab it.
He's going to look for his arrow right now. I'm going too detailed today.
No, I had gotten some new broadheads, with a Christmas gift card. So I was going to, you know, try them on my arrows here. So that's why I had a few sitting in my office. So I've got the Easton, the 6.5mm carbons. They've got the like orange, I don't know what specific, it doesn't say anything other than the 6.5mm carbons.
Okay.
Is what
I'm. So there's no like tag name that's associated to it. Okay.
Nope.
All right.
No tag name. And that's probably why the price tag is right in the middle of the road.
Right in the middle. Yeah. It's all good, dude.
At the boat
show. It's all good. And, you know, it's all about the confidence. What about the selection of the rage?
Yep.
Okay. Because you hear the stories, but then you also hear the good out of that too. Like Rage is one of those brands that is, if it costs someone a deer, whether they put a bad shot on it or not, they hate Rage. Right. But at the same time, you talk to a group of people out there and they absolutely will never shoot another broadhead because Rage is the best. What was your, how did you land on Rage?
When I was first looking at, trying to find a broadhead, I was trying to find what was readily available. I believe one of your other podcasts, one of the guests that you've had on kind of said the same thing where, you know, if I bust one or lose one or something happened, like, can I run to the shop and get one easily where I don't, you know, being up here in the UP, we've got a Walmart here and some other stuff, but sometimes it, you know, some gear is not readily available like it is in some, you know, maybe bigger areas. So I was trying to find something that I could readily just go pick up if need be in a pinch. Yeah. But I like the Rage Hypodermics. It's got like a 2-inch diameter. I've been using the 100 grain, although after one of your last podcasts where you were talking about the quality from 100 to 125 is so much better, especially if I'm going to be going with dropping down to the 340s. I think I'm going to go with that 125 grain here. Like I said, that conversation you were having about the quality being so much better on the 125, you're kind of selling me on it. But
yeah, it's just more material. Right. Yeah. And when you talk with an engineer, he said the only reason broadhead companies make 100 grain broadheads is because the people think that they need it. It's still almost like a residual left over from the speed days where it's like, dude, I got to have when you have an engineer saying, I wish we didn't make them. I wish we only made 125 and above. That just kind of is like, okay, more material, right? Thicker blades.
Yeah.
Everything is just more robust. And yes, you get a little heavier. Maybe you'd get a little more FOC that depending on what camp you're in, people like FOC, right? And so I'm a total arrow weight type of guy. Like I'm not an FOC freak, but when it comes to, I don't ever see myself kind of going back to 100 grain broadhead ever.
Yeah. And like I said, after listening to that conversation you had and just what I've kind of noticed with my arrows, my $2 that I shot this year, the one in Iowa and the one in Michigan, I know I need to make some changes with my arrow. I'm not getting clean pass through or deep enough penetration that I'd like to see. And I think.
You getting pass throughs?
The $2 I shot this year, no.
Okay, I want you to set that up because this is where I start to get really intense about gear.
Yeah.
Okay. How far were these animals away from you?
So the first buck that I shot here in Michigan, that one was at 8 yards.
And no pass through.
No, it was a very steep angle and I was a little bit back and I don't know if I hit a rib or just, you would think at 8 yards, it would have went clean through, but it hit something and stopped halfway. Actually, it was 3/4 of the way in. It didn't go all the way through, but it was 3/4 of the way in now that I'm replaying it in my head.
Okay. Dude, this is where I am like 8 yards.
Yeah.
And what is your draw length?
Right about 29 and a half ish, 29 and 3/8, give or take.
Dude, you got the same roughly. I shoot 30, so it's only an inch difference.
Yeah.
What poundage were you shooting?
Like I want to say 50. I think at the time that first buck, it was set at 56. I throw all ego out the door. So, I'm not a big poundage guy. I'm sure there'll be guys listening to this that are like, you're only 56 pounds on your draw. I have zero ego about what my poundage is at. It's what I've been comfortable at for a while. So,
yeah. So here's where like the poundage, take or leave it at 8 yards.
That's what I mean.
Take it or leave it at 8 yards. Like that to me is a secondary conversation.
Yeah.
So I look at something like arrow weight on something like that. That could be an issue. Yeah. The next thing is the amount of energy loss that happens on a mechanical broadhead that because those hyperdermics, they're 3 inch. Is it a 3 or 3.25?
2 inch diameter.
It's a 2 inch hyperdermic. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So something happened in that distance that did not allow that to go through. I look at that and I say, with the technology that we have today, that should have been a pass through.
Should have.
So Should have. Now you didn't hit a shoulder. Did you hit spine?
No, it hit. Well, I think I might have hit part of the shoulder. Okay. It was a weird angle where he got around to my back right. He was grunting up a storm following two does, and he was quartering away from me. Mm-hmm. And the entrance that it went in, I think, might have caught part of his front shoulder. But the hard part is, too, is it also had – I got lucky on where the arrow hit because I had deflected off of a branch that I didn't see. It was a very small branch. It wasn't enough to really affect – I mean, where I was aiming, you know, they say pick a hair – where I was aiming and where the arrow ended up wasn't that far off. So while it did deflect off a small branch, it wasn't enough to really mess with my arrow flight too much. But then again, maybe that also messed up the penetration too.
That could have played a bigger issue than you think.
Yeah.
Something if it had enough, if it generated enough deflection to alter the course of the arrow, then it probably also altered the momentum of the arrow. But if it didn't, like, dude, I'm not trying to sound like I'm bragging, but at 20 yards and in for me, if I don't get a pass through, something is wrong.
Sure.
Something's wrong. Even on the biggest, widest bodied buck.
Yep.
And I'm, you know, blowing through ribs with my setup and things like that. Now that might be a little bit of ego talking, right? Because I do shoot way more. I shoot 12 more pounds of draw weight than what you're saying. Yeah. But I think what you're going to find and I'm not good. I don't want to put words in your mouth. And I know you said it's not about the ego of a heavy draw cycle, a draw weight, but my guess is you're going to try to be pulling like working your way up in draw weight.
100%. So that experience with that deer to your 100% what you just said, I was like, hey, something's off here. Mm-hmm. And my, that was like the start of me where I was saying, okay, I'm going to switch my arrows. I did up my draw weight before I left for Iowa. Mm-hmm. Because with that bear archery bow, that Carnage, the one thing I really like about it is you can just use an Allen wrench to up your poundage. You just like mark the bolt or whatever it is so that you know how far you're turning it. As long as you turn the top and the bottom ones the same amount, then it matches up. So you can on the fly change your poundage really easy. So I upped it to 60. And, you know, it took some tweaking on some other stuff before I went to Iowa just to make sure, you know, it was dialed in right. But that moment was the start of me being like, okay, I do need to up my poundage. I may need to look at my arrows too eventually here.
Yeah.
And that really was the start of me upping things and making some changes, because I agree with you wholeheartedly. From 20 yards and in, it shouldn't have happened. And I don't know that the $2 that I had shot prior and the year before were clean pass-throughs. Mm-hmm. Both of those were within 20 yards. So I don't know if those shot placements were just better for me or what have you, but at least with this one, it was heading me down the path here of making what I think are some proper changes that are needed, some tweaks.
Yeah. My moment of that was on a 210 inch buck. Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
2010, November 5th at 9:12 or something like that in the morning.
Oh.
My number one target buck that I'd been chasing for 5 years comes in front of me, 210 inches. I draw back. He's 22 yards broadside, and I hit him. With the arrow setup I have now, I'm guessing dead buck.
Yeah.
Like high lung, but I feel like with the broadhead that I was using at the time and a lighter arrow, I hit like right underneath of the spine. So I had like, I one lunged him and hit bone, and my arrow just stopped.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
And so when the next year, when they killed it, they looked and they saw the scar from where I hit him, and the guy, you know, the guy who ended up shooting that buck was like, dude, I just don't understand how this buck survived this shot. And it was because I was shooting too light of an arrow. And so I'm that guy. My wife reminded me this morning. I'm an all or nothing guy. Like the kids were arguing, or when people start complaining about the usage of the iPad, I take it away and I hide it and it's done. We're done with the iPad. Right.
Yeah.
For me, that's what I did with my arrow. And I'm like, let's turn the volume up on it. Right. And that's when I started looking at the day six arrows and getting a very heavy, a heavy arrow with a heavy insert and 125 grain broadhead. And since then, I've only lost two deer, one doe that I have no idea. I smoked this chick and I have no idea how she got away. And then another one, I put a bad shot on her, her. But other than that, I believe every buck that I've hit it's been either a pass through or like in 2020, I did a frontal. And of course, if you're going to do a frontal, the likelihood of a pass through is very low.
Yeah,
but I got a shit ton of penetration and I killed that deer dead as a doornail. So, so I'm very happy with my arrow setup these days, but it did take a moment of, dude, I'm not packing enough heat to get the job done, and I need to turn the volume up on it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, the first buck that I shot in Michigan this year was the start. Then the buck that I, nine pointer that I killed in Iowa, basically almost a week later to the day. It was about a week later to the day. Mm-hmm. You know, we went through that story on the prior episode where, you know, the arrow only went in about halfway on a 25-yard shot.
Right.
Seeing both bucks this year that I shot, though, seeing red at impact, that big hole is like, mm-hmm. okay, that's great, but I would feel better about clean pass-throughs. So that's the other thing I've been considering. As much as I love my rages, I've been starting to think about, should I be going to a fixed blade so that I'm not losing that momentum? Because mm-hmm. so much of that gets absorbed when that broadhead expands.
Yep.
So I've been flirting with that too. As much as I love my rages, and I've luckily, I'll knock on wood when I say this, I have yet to lose a deer that I've shot with an arrow. I've been able to recover everyone, but I'm seriously considering.
Yeah. And I'll tell you this, obviously two holes are better than one. And the issue that I have is I would rather have a pass through on a marginal shot than a half, like let's just say a one lung type scenario.
Yeah.
That deer's going to die. But if you get that, especially if you're hunting out of a tree stand and you're getting that angle with no, dude, you're going to lose blood faster than you think. And maybe mm-hmm. the first 100 yards, you might get some drips and stuff. But if that starts to leak inside the body, dude, I had a buck in, it was 2009. I shot a buck and it was a complete pass through, but his front leg was way forward and he was kind of trotting and I stopped him dead in his tracks and his right leg was back and his left leg was forward, front left leg was forward. And I smoked him double lung. But then when he closed, his skin came over top of the wounds.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Yep. And there was zero blood. There was no blood, and we had to grid search CRP to find him. When we found him, and when I gutted him, his internal cavity was all the blood went inside, mm-hmm. inside of him. And that's so
that's how my Iowa buck was this year. I mean, I only hit one lung, but I mean, he was a big deer. You know, mm-hmm. we talked about how heavy he was. Whatever, that fat had plugged up the hole, and. Yep. The blood trail had just dissipated, but when we found him and I started dressing him, that cavity was just full to the brim with blood.
Yeah. Okay. So the bow hunting throughout, you know, we've talked about let me ask you, is it a React site that's on this package deal? A React Trophy Ridge? Or is it a different one?
No, it's their standard for, what do they call it? I'll look up the name.
It doesn't matter. What I'm getting at is it a React or not? Is it the adjustable where you set the first pin and the second pin and the rest of the pins are automatically adjusted?
No, you have to manually set them. It's, I believe they call it the Fatal Four. It's like their basic site setup where you have to manually set each of your pins.
Right. Okay. All right, cool. All right. Outside of that, any other gear that you picked up specifically for deer hunting or for bow hunting?
Yeah, I mean, I know we talked about it a little bit in that prior episode too, but my peep sight eliminator, I think is a really unique piece of gear, that was because I'm unique in that I'm very right hand dominant, but I'm legally blind in my right eye, so going down that journey too was a process, you know, essentially all it does is extend out, you know, your sight further and then adds in that iron sight where you just use your bottom pin as your true north. That piece of gear was huge for me, just allowing me to bow hunt, and feel confident in the woods. But you know, I already had a lot of my other gear just because I'd been rifle hunting for so long. A lot of that stuff can cross over from the rifle world to the bow hunting world. The only other real difference for me was the first year I had done it, I was just using your standard ladder stands. after 2 years of doing that, then I started delving into using a climber. I'm not mm-hmm. quite a saddle guy yet. I'm not there. So I run the Summit Viper climber, and I love it. Yeah. I'm very attached to it. I feel very comfortable in it. I mean, I hunted for a week straight in Iowa all day sits, and having that thing on my back on, you know, most days when I was hiking into it to spots, it was probably a quarter mile in or three quarters of a mile in, three quarters of a mile out. No problem carrying that thing on my back and getting up in the tree and sitting all day. It was, like I said, I'm very attached to that thing because I feel super comfortable in it.
Yeah. Well, again, it's all about what you're comfortable with, right? The, you know, like I hunted with a climber right around the 2005 when I moved back to Iowa from, I was living in Alabama at the time. I moved back from Iowa, and I had an old climber that I was using along with some ladder stands and things like that. And what I found for me, like, I'm guessing you hunt in a lot of pines.
Yeah, a lot of pines, a lot of oaks too, yeah. white
straight
oaks.
Up and down trees. A lot.
As much as I can find them. I mean, you know, yeah. Sometimes they're hard to come by depending on where you're trying to set up. But yeah, I would say primarily a lot of pines, a lot of white oaks.
Yeah.
That's typically where I'm in.
Gotcha. And the thing, I think climbers definitely have their place. I'm a huge fan of them in the right scenario, but the places that for some reason I always wanted to be, I would walk in with a climber and I'm like, dude, how am I supposed to get up in this tree in this pinch point with all these Y's in the tree, right? And little branches coming out and things like that. There was other places that I had some pine stands or some more mature timber that had more straight up and down trees, and it worked great. But I didn't want to, I found myself needing to be in different thicker spaces and thicker trees with lower to the ground stem count meant, you know, more branches everywhere. And so that's when I moved over to like the Lone Wolf Assault with the four climbing sticks. So
yeah,
but they all have what I'm starting to find is there's no, you know, like Lamborghinis are awesome, but they use a lot of gas, right? Or, you know, a brand new truck is great for hauling stuff and pulling heavy loads, but they're expensive, right? And maybe they're not as fuel efficient. But, and so that's what I'm getting at is like from the hunting gear standpoint, it's like a saddle is awesome, but a hang and hunt tree stand is awesome, but a climber tree stand is awesome, but. Right. And so what I found is like, I said this before, but, I have always used, assault, a Lone Wolf Assault, and, Summit sent me a free tree stand to test out and use. And so I used it this year and I'm like, dude, like it's so big. It's not like it's not good for run and gun setups, but it's so big. And I was just like leaning back in it. And I was not even thinking about getting down. I was extremely comfortable in it. Like the big Summits, the big Millenniums, like I'm getting older, dude. I might have to start looking into some of those stands.
Yeah, no doubt. And it, you know, to your point, there's no one size fits all for hunting setups. And as I've kind of evolved as a, you know, a bow hunter, I think that my, you know, wanting to use a climber or try some different setups has grown with that also. I mean, you know, you can still bait here in up in the UP. So a lot of my early hunt setups were, okay, I'm going to bait this spot. I can put a ladder stand here, keep coming back because this is where I'm trying to get deer to come through. Well, as I've upped my woodsmanship and started to get away from baiting when at all possible, You know, like the buck that I shot here in Michigan this year was my first 100% no bait at all. I was hunting a scrape line, a big community scrape I had found. When you find that sign, to your point, you might not have a nice straight tree where that sign is at or where you're trying to get into, where I can't just throw up a ladder stand, or maybe I can't get up in a climber and I've got to maybe try and figure out a ground setup or something else, or maybe I need to start venturing into the world of saddles, or, you know, even just the hang-ons stands, you know, that nature. Same thing with Iowa. You know, whether the public hunt that I did where I had scouted out some stuff, or even the DIY stuff I was doing on private, getting in there and trying to get where the deer are, there may not always be that great tree to just climb right up in that's nice and straight for my summit. So it's an ever evolving thing. Yeah. I feel like.
Was there any other, you know, from the move into bow hunting, was there any other gear that you picked up?
Yeah. In this one, you know, again, it's not a super sexy answer, maybe not all that interesting to talk about, but, a game cart, something that I needed to pick up. You know, from going from my standard rifle hunting at deer camp with all the guys, okay, you shoot one with a rifle, usually doesn't run very far, you know, field dress it. You usually have somebody help you drag it at least to where the road is. Somebody pulls up with the side-by-side or the truck, toss it in and bring it back to camp. It's usually not a very far endeavor. Once I started bow hunting, especially when I started getting into using my climber more and more boots on the ground and getting deeper in, and, you know, in my scouting and doing different things, and also being out there by myself in the woods, I was like, okay, well, I'm not always going to be able to call somebody. Yeah, I've got some buddies that'll come help me track a deer or do whatever, but people got jobs and kids and lives and whatever. I got to figure out how I can lone wolf this if need be. And a game car was one of those things. So
that's a high quality purchase that I feel is underestimated, because I myself do not have one and I rely on other people to help me get my deer out of the woods. And I feel like if I had a game cart, I probably wouldn't need as much help. But let's be honest, a lot of where I could, like when the crops are out, I can drive a truck fairly close to where my deer is at.
Sure.
Yeah.
And honestly, all of that came from the second buck that I shot last year. It had gone down an extremely steep ridge. I'm talking like 150-foot drop over maybe 50 or 60 yards. We had tracked it and it was starting to get dark. And I'm like, hey, one of us is going to fall off this ridge and get hurt. I'm going to leave my sweatshirt here at Last Blood and hopefully keep the coyotes away. And I'll come back in the morning. I went back in the morning and found it after like 45 minutes. Well, my uncle who had been with me, he's like, hey, I'm tied up. I can't help you drag this deer out.
I
wasn't able to find anybody else. I had an extremely tough drag completely by myself, like through some, it had run down into some cattails, a swampy marsh area. And from there to the closest road, it was almost 400 yards of just thick, god-awful, nasty stuff. I didn't have a jet sled, no nothing. I had the drag you just tie around the neck and then have the shoulder straps.
Oh, yeah.
And
pure American force.
Oh, my Lord. Yeah. You know, and then after spending all that energy getting it out to the road, then I had to get it in the back of my truck by myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was like, I just being that physically spent, I was like, there's got to be a better way. So I immediately started looking for game carts, and that's been a total game changer.
Yeah. Dude, have you seen those pulleys that attach to the back of your bed of your truck?
I have.
And you see like guys just wrap it around a deer and then you just basically have to finesse the deer. It comes with a remote control.
Yeah.
That's what I want. One of those. Yeah.
Those are super slick. I saw a hilarious video yesterday of, you know, they have the gambrel that hooks right into your hitch.
Yeah.
I saw one, somebody had a Tesla Cybertruck that had a deer hanging on it and they were like driving it somewhere. They were at like an intersection, and this person pulled up and was like filming this Cybertruck with a deer hanging from the gambrel off the back of it. I was just like, man, what is going on? Like
the world we live in, right? The world we live in.
Yeah.
Well, Scott, man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to BS about the gear that you've, you know, that you've used and how it's evolved and things like that. So, again, I really appreciate your time, and, give a shout out to your book one more time.
Yeah. So the book is, Why Is for Youper. Here it is right here. You can find it on Amazon. Perfect. Also even better, if you're going to go and order it online, I would say go to the Stormy Cromer website, you know, Stormy Cromer, the hats that I was wearing it in our last episode, they're made right here in the Upper Peninsula. Great company. I know the owners very well, amazing people, and they sell it right from their website. So if you go to stormycromer.com, they've got Why Is for Youper for sale there. So there, Amazon, you can get it to wherever you need to be.
Perfect. Scott, appreciate your time. Good luck the rest of the season, and we'll talk to you when we talk to you.
All right. Thanks so much, Dan. I appreciate it.
Your little one grew 3 inches overnight. Adorable. Also, expensive. Sell their pint-sized pieces on Depop and list them in minutes with no selling fees. Because somewhere, a dad refuses to pay full price for the clothes his kid will outgrow tomorrow. And he's ready to buy your son's entire wardrobe right now. Consider your future growth spurt budget secured. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.